Please welcome Michael Kaplan.
The first time that I developed a crush on a girl, I was so tongue-tied that I had a friend call her to tell her that I liked her and to ask her if she liked me. And that conversation turned into an argument, and he ended up calling her a little bitch. So the second time I had a crush on a girl, I knew I had to take matters into my own hands. Now, in high school, the only time I met girls was at speech and debate tournaments on the weekend because I went to an all-boys school. So Lori Plager was a very nice, very attractive young woman who went to Birmingham High School. She was a year older than me, but I was a rising star in the speech and debate world because by then they had created this fringe category called after-dinner speaking, which was to create like an original amusing speech, and I was just cleaning up in that category. So the scales were kind of even. And at one tournament, you know, Lori and I would see each other, we'd smile, maybe exchange a few words, and then she went up to me and she said, "I can't imagine what that feels like to make a room full of people laugh." You know, looking back, that was an invitation to talk about anything for as long as I wanted. But I handled it by saying, "Would you like me to write you a speech?" And when she got over her shock, she said, "Yeah, okay." And so I did. I vaguely remember, I think the topic was how to make friends in the afterlife. And so I went over to her house and I gave her this, I read the speech to her and she seemed to like it. And then we got together at another point so we could sort of talk it through and make some changes. And you know, she wanted to ask my advice about some things. And then we got together again and she actually performed it for me and I gave her feedback on that. And this was all building towards the tournament at Burbank High School where she was going to perform it in competition. And then the next day on Sunday, she was going to come over to my house. We were going to do a little postmortem. We were going to take a walk. And I was going to try to kiss her. Which was an implausible, terrifying notion for me at that age, but I knew that it was structurally sound. Because we had had three dates ingeniously disguised as public speaking workshops. But nevertheless, I was set up to go out on a limb and make this grand Sunday gesture. So now there we were on Saturday at the Burbank High School speech tournament. Lori performs the speech. She doesn't kill it, but she gets laughs. And afterwards, one of her classmates, Joel Samuelson, comes up to me and gives me kind of a raised eyebrow. And he says, "So you wrote that speech for Plager?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Did you know she has a boyfriend?" That was new information. And I, you know, pretended that that didn't faze me in the least, but that completely blew up the entire scheme. And what was this rock solid structure going to be about? What was my Sunday grand gesture at this point? I just couldn't let this all wrap up with a whimper. And then that night, I received a sign. And to fully explain this sign, you have to understand that as a teenager, I was a young man out of time, that I really had very little to do with my contemporary culture. I loved old movies and old music and old radio shows from the 30s and 40s. And I spent my recreational time deep in the past, you know, listening to Jack Benny radio shows and playing the soundtrack of That's Entertainment over and over again until it drove my sister crazy. And so it was Saturday night, and after the Carol Burnett show, the local public radio station played a couple of hours of, you know, performances of yesteryear. And I not always listened to it religiously, but I would also tape it because I was building up my own library and archives of material. And on this particular night, they were playing audio clips from this 1950s TV show that Judy Garland hosted. It was a very short-lived show, but because she was so beloved by all of her fellow entertainers, she had just amazing guests coming out of the woodwork to try and make this work for her. And so in these particular clips, her guests were Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. And so the three of them, they're just kind of yucking it up, Rat Pack style, and they're singing different songs. And this theme starts to emerge that Frank and Dean are vying for Judy's attention. And then at a certain point, the two of them sing a song that's about a love triangle. And they are so charming and so winning with the audience that I realize I'm going to sing this song to Lori, that this is absolutely my Sunday grand gesture. Now, this is such an embarrassing moment in my life that there are certain parts of it that are just clouded over and wiped from the memory banks. So I can tell you that, you know, Lori came over on Sunday and we did have a postmortem and we did go and take a walk around the neighborhood. I, for the life of me, cannot remember how I segued into the song. And, you know, because I was a child out of time, you know, I imagine it was something along the lines of, you know, Lori, what I appreciate, what I really love about the Great American Songbook is that there is a song for every situation, for every mood, and this is mine. I mean, that's probably what I had. And because I didn't have Nelson Riddle and his orchestra hiding in the bushes, I had to go launch into it a cappella. And I'm going to go all the way out on a limb and do it for you now. The one I love belongs to somebody else. Now, okay, that's inappropriate. There's nothing about romantic love that involves anybody owning anybody else. Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, their attitudes towards women, abominable. Me at 15, turning to them at role models, equally abominable. Let's continue. She means her tender songs for somebody else. Now, at this point, I boldly, tentatively put my arm on her shoulder. And even when I've got my arms around her, you see what I did there? I know her thoughts are strong for somebody else. At this point, she chuckles. Is she laughing with me or at me? I don't have time to figure it out. I'm singing a song here. And the hands I hold belong to somebody else. Should I take my arm off her shoulder and grab her hand? Never mind, I just sang it. It's too late. I bet they're not so cold, for somebody else. Here's the problem with this song. I was so excited to discover it. I was so intent about learning it. And I was so nervous about being able to sing it successfully that it was only now occurring to me, this is not a song that shakes up a love triangle and dazzles the woman so she turns her gaze towards the other guy. This is kind of a good-natured, sad sack embrace of the status quo. And this is the grand gesture that I've planned, and I don't love it, but I've got a goddamn song to finish. It's tough to be alone on a shelf, worse to fall in love by yourself. And that's a great lyric. I was proud to sing that part. Because the one I love belongs to somebody else. You may applaud. After what felt like one of the longest silences of my life, Lori said, "That was really sweet." And she acknowledged that, yes, she had a boyfriend who went to community college, no less. And I walked her to her car, and she kissed my cheek, and she got in and drove away. And for the rest of the year, we would continue to run into each other at speech and debate tournaments, and we would say hi, we would smile, sometimes we would even banter, but we never mentioned again that Sunday that I screwed up my courage to proclaim, I adore you, and you have a boyfriend, and I'm cool with that. Thank you.